ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
That's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of whose program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
The T-ball program, usually heard at this time, will be momentarily delayed for a special broadcast.
Prepare yourself for a trip through time, space, and the reality that you have known. When you enter into Willow's world. Willow Andreasen brings you the thought-provoking dialogue and news from around the world that shows your mind has no limitations. Take it away, Willow.
Good afternoon and welcome from a beautiful United Kingdom. My name is Willow Andreasen, also known as Sari Sunflower, on the Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com chat room. And this is the Thursday, the 5th of May, 2022 edition of Willow's World. And before I get started with telling you what's happening on today's show, I just want to say a big, big thanks to Patrick, who was on the other side of the studio wall with today's Not for Public Consumption. A big, big thank you indeed to Patrick. A big thank you to all the hosts here at the station for everything they all do. It's truly appreciated indeed, and also to the producers and moderators who sometimes have challenges thrown their way, but they approach those challenges with smiles on their faces, hope in their hearts, springs in their steps, spine in their steel, and just about every other positive superlative you can throw at it. But yes, they do a fantastic job. A big, big thank you to them, and also huge outpourings of, and lots of gratitude. Lots of gratitude indeed, and lots of everything else that's good to the team that I am humbled and honoured to be a part of, a team that ensures that this station remains on air for as close to 24/7 as we can get it, which is most of the time. We're all volunteers here. We love doing what we do. Seems to be a bit of a misunderstanding at times. If you enjoy it, mustn't take it seriously. Well, yeah, we do. Indeedy, we do. In sickness and in health, propping your eyelids up with matches, etc. All part and parcel of it. And yeah, we take this very, very seriously indeed. Also, huge outpourings of gratitude and lots of love and hugs to Liz Ringley, who continues to represent so, so much to the station and to the individual whose presence, whose vision, whose drive convinced him he needed to establish a safe and secure platform for free speech over 11 years ago now. And yes, like many, many here, he could see these times coming, the times that we're currently living through. And it was his determination and intention that individuals should be able to navigate these choppy waters as fearlessly and as self-sufficiently as possible. Now, whether he intended, whether he ever foresaw actually that this station would go on to become the global phenomenon that it has, I'm not entirely sure. He's probably not at all surprised by it. But I'm sure that he appreciates what the station has come to represent in recent times, especially during the lockdowns and the pandemic and the situations that it hurled at individuals, the effects it had on them. There was a bit more spare time, though, for people to start learning the truth about what's going on as well, which was one of the beneficial things about the pandemic, by the way. If anybody thinks there's anything negative about it, that's one of the positives about it. There were quite a few positives, actually, of people. If you stop to take a look, there were. But we miss him every single day. That's Mike Ringley, that's Night Hawk. We thank Hawk for this amazing gift of a station. A big, big thank you to him indeed for the station. And also huge outpourings of gratitude. And I'm looking at his photographs to say this, huge outpourings of gratitude and lots of love and hugs to my late other half, Briarios, who continues to represent so, so much to me. And I'm determined to keep his flame burning at the station as well. Because sometimes it feels like I'm the only one who does. But I'm determined to do that. And huge outpourings of gratitude to him for everything that he continues to represent in my life. Thank you very, very much indeed, my love. Also, huge outpourings of gratitude. Lots of love and hugs and kisses to some very, very special loved ones in my life. They know exactly who they are. They know exactly who they are. And I call them my angels. A big, big thank you to them. Okay, thank you for letting me know. Thank you for letting me know. Thank you for letting me know. Sorry, I've just seen a note from somebody. I've just said thanks for letting me know. Also to the musician. You're welcome. You're welcome. Unpredictable times right now. And I don't know about you, but I'm sort of getting a vague feeling that things are about to come to a head. Let's hold each other's hands and we will get through this as well. I love you, my dear. Last but not least, folks, huge outpourings of gratitude and lots of love and hugs to you amazing listeners. We do this for you. We wouldn't be able to do this without you either, folks. It's down to your kindness, your love, your support, your generosity that we are able to continue providing you with such a wide variety of shows hosted by fantastic individuals from all around the world on a close to 24/7 basis. It's your kindness, your love, your support, your generosity that enables us to provide you with the archives for free as well. We have promotions here at the station. Those promotions are purely to do with the station itself, station business and station shows. And we do not take your support for granted, folks. We don't. And I know I speak on behalf of everybody here when I say that we are all immensely grateful to you all for continuing to support the station, even through challenging times. Even if those times are challenging to you, you do so. And we are immensely grateful to you all indeed. A big, big thank you to you all. Now, as I just mentioned, we are entirely listener-supported, folks, and if you'd like to help us out and you're not sure how, what I recommend you do is you visit our website, which you can reach using one of two URLs. It's either www.revolution.radio, that's www.revolution.radio, or www.freedomslips.com. I'll repeat that as well. It's www.freedomslips.com. And you'll arrive upon this amazing website, which has been established and lovingly maintained by the amazing Monster 383. So when you see him in the chat room, folks, say a big thanks to him. Places you need to explore to be found on the nav bar, folks, that's the static bar of options there. It remains there at the top of the homepage as you scroll down, so you don't have to lose your place if you want to go and check something else out. You don't have to worry about losing your place because you don't. You just click on the option concerned and it'll open up in a new tab. And the first place you need to check out is the store, folks. That's the link to our Zazzle store. I'm just clicking on that now. Let's see if there's any special offers today. Because I have to check sometimes, because sometimes there's different offers on different things, if that makes sense. I'm sure it does. Oh, it's 15% off everything. So 15, that's 15%. That's 15% off everything in the station Zazzle store, folks. Probably a good day to go in there and browse the virtual shelves, bag yourself a bargain. You'd be helping out the station as well. We've got all sorts of goodies in there. All sorts of goodies indeed. And, we've got bumper stickers. We've got mouse pads. We've got T-shirts. We've got mugs. We've got the clock as well. I'm sure I've missed a few things out, but we've got all sorts of gorgeous items in there. So go and check them out, folks. They really are rather fabulous. And the next option to explore is the donations option, which is 6 furlong on the nav bar. Click on that, opens up in a new tab for you, and details all the methods bar two of supporting the station. I've just mentioned one of those, which is the store. We've got Patreon, we've got Donor Box, we've got direct payment. North America only, all have monthly support options available for them. You need to be a patron in order to do so on Patreon. You can become a patron either by clicking on the option here on this page, or you can return to the home page. You'll find it sitting near the top, pretty in pink. And Donor Box, alternative to PayPal, international in scope, easy to use. Don't only have the option of setting up something on a monthly basis, you can use it whenever you are able. Direct payment North America only has the same options available, except it's restricted to the US and Canada only. You need a debit or credit card as well. We accept three different types of cryptocurrency support, folks. They are Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Bitcoin Cash. I'll repeat those. Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Bitcoin Cash. There are QR codes on the screen. You point your device at them. You do your thing. And last but not least of the snail mail details, folks. Yep, we still accept checks or money orders, and they are to be made payable to Revolution Radio. Revolution spelled R-E-V-O-L-U-T-I-O-N. I'll repeat that. It's R-E-V-O-L-U. T-I-O-N, and radio is spelt R-A-D-I-O. I'll repeat that as well. It's R-A-D-I-O. And then they are to be mailed to the wonderful lady horse, Terry Ackerman. Terry spelt T-E-R-R-Y. I'll repeat that, T-E-R-R-Y. And Ackerman is spelt A-C-K-E-R-M-A-N. I'll repeat that as well. It's A-C-K-E-R-M-A-N. And the mailing address is 1793. That's 1793 North Eden. Eden spelt E-D-O-N Road. And that's Allen, A-L-L-E-N, Michigan, M-I, 49227. So checks or money orders made payable to Revolution Radio are then to be mailed to the wonderful lady horse, Terry Ackerman, at 1793 North Eden Road. And that's Allen, Michigan, 49227. Those details are also found on the main homepage. I'm returning there right now, checking out that count, which reads 442,403. Yay! Not sure what it was on freedomslips.com. Haven't checked for a bit. But again, a big, big thank you to everybody for visiting the website. And if you've got a product, I've mentioned before, if you've got a product or company, folks, you'd like to advertise on a cost-effective basis on a website that receives a healthy number of visitors per day, well, You can advertise on our website for $25 a month. And for further details, you need to contact the station's GM, Amad Painter, using the following email address, which is themadpainter13@yahoo.com. That's themadpainter13@yahoo.com. I'll spell out that first segment for you. It's THEMADPAINTER13. And I'll repeat that. It's THEMADPAINTER13@yahoo.com. All lowercase in format, by the way. Also, we've got dedicated call to listen numbers for both studios, folks. They're numbers you just call. You just listen. You don't have to talk. You don't have to participate. That's all you need to do. But what we do recommend you do is you contact your cell phone or landline service providers to check out costs, because there are costs involved with calling those numbers. Don't want you getting any nasty shocks in your bills. Once you've done that, once you're happy with what you've been told, the the dedicated call to listen number for Studio 8, I don't know where that came from. Whoa. It's 518-906-1839. So for Studio 8, it's 518-906-1839. And the dedicated call to listen number for Studio B is 518-906-1859. I'll repeat that as well. It's 518-906-1859. But don't forget to call to check those costs first. Check out with your cell phone landline service providers first for those costs. I've no idea where that came from. Last but not least, the archives, folks, free to access, will be for the foreseeable. And you can reach the archives even by clicking on the archives option, which is third along the nav bar, or going direct to its URL, which is www.revolutionradioarchives.com. That's www.revolutionradioarchives.com. And the details you need to access the wonders that await you within are the username and the password, both of which are lowercase and case sensitive in format. The username is Rev Radio. That's Rev Radio. I'll spell it for you. R-E-V-R-A-D-I-O. And I'll repeat that for you. It's R-E-V-R-A-D-I-O. And the password is ROCKS! Exclamation mark. That's ROCKS! Exclamation mark. And I'll spell that for you. It's R-O-C-K-S! Exclamation mark. And I'll repeat that for you. It's R-O-C-K-S! Exclamation mark. Don't forget that exclamation mark, folks, because without it, you won't get in. And I know that because I omitted to do that once. And guess what? I didn't get in. But again, a big, big thank you to everyone for your continued support. We are truly, truly grateful indeed. Thank you. So, what's happening on today's show? Well, before I tell you what's happening on today's show, I just want to tell you, there's a returning show tomorrow. There was going to be two, but I've just been notified that, that one of them is not going to be able to return until the following week. So I'll tell you a little bit more about it. Although, actually, if you go on the... if you go on the schedule, you'll see it. Anyway, two returning shows tomorrow. Well, one's going to be starting next week and the other one is going to be starting tomorrow. We'll start with the one which is coming back tomorrow, which is Jimmy Jean is back with us, starting at 6 p.m. Eastern tomorrow on Studio A with Into the Microcosm. So Jimmy Jean is back with us starting tomorrow, 6 p.m. Eastern with Into the Microcosm. And the following week, starting at 1 p.m. Eastern, also on Studio A on Friday, is Dean with Way of Life. So, got one show returning tomorrow. That's Jimmy Jean, 6 p.m. Eastern, Studio A, with Into the Microcosm. And the following Friday is going to be Dean with Way of Life at 1 p.m. Eastern on Studio A as well. It's Studio A, not E. It sounded like E, didn't it? Wasn't meant to. But again, a big, big thank you to everyone for, for letting me know that. Sorry, I'm thinking about three or four different things at once at the moment. I'm just going to get my brain back into gear. So, what's going to be happening on today's show? I'm going to be wandering into the chat room shortly to say a big hello to everybody in there, make sure everybody's okay. Then, after today's Geek Headlines, this is the first hour, we're going to be following that up with Spiritual Matters. Now, focusing on two articles examining our relationship with death in a spiritual sense. The first article joins a hospital chaplain who shares his observations gleaned from his experiences with terminally ill patients and offers his observations on the spiritual aspect of death. The second article focuses on auric changes prior to a soul's departure from the body. And we're concluding this week's Spiritual Matters with a selection of accounts offered by participants on an online forum I've seen in response to the question, can humans sense death? I'd say a resounding yes to that one, but just that choose to blot it out. Second hour is commencing with the 14th of a selection of love-focused poetry in Willow's Pep Talk segment, after which the doors are open to the coziness that is Willow's Poetry Corner. Returning to the worlds of 20th and early 21st century American poetry for a study of one of its most respected of literary talents. He was born in August 1925. His father was a carpenter by trade and frequently travelled for work purposes. He was afflicted by osteomyelitis during his youth, although successfully completed his studies at high school before earning his Bachelor of Arts degree from the University of Miami in 1945. He gained his Master's of Arts from the University of North Carolina 2 years later, and also spent a period of time studying at Stanford University before finally earning his doctorate from Iowa University in 1954. He opted for a career in education, teaching in various academic establishments over the course of his career, including the Iowa Writers' Workshop at Iowa University and the University of Florida, Gainesville. His first collection of poetry, The Summer Anniversaries, was published in 1961 and won the American Academy of Poets' Lamont Poetry Prize the same year. The winner of numerous awards and accolades over the course of his career, he served as the Chancellor of the Academy of American Poets for a period of 6 years, so that's between 1997 and 2003. He was highly respected by his students, who included such luminaries as Mark Strand, William Stafford, and John Irving. His notable works include his Pulitzer Prize-winning poetic collection from 1979, called Selected Poems. He was born in Miami, Florida. His name was Donald Justice. The remainder of the show sees us dashing across the moonlit Kiss Lawn and entering the Bijou booth at his Willows Observatory. Four articles today, folks, the first of which is Journeying 47 Million Light Years for Constellation of Cetus to examine the supermassive black hole nestled in the centre of the Messier 77 galaxy. We've been to Messier 77 before, haven't we? Well, we're going back there. Second article is returning a little closer to home, 130.4 light years from our planet, to be precise, to savour the discovery of a pair of brown dwarf stars believed to be the widest separated to date. Now, if you're wondering why that is weird, you'll find out during the article. The third article travels further afield once more and trains the telescope up upon a trio of galaxies currently undergoing the process of amalgamation, over 681 million light years away, that is, in the constellation of Cancer. And today's conclusion to our astronomical adventures swivels the telescope 130 million light-years distant to focus upon the aftermath of a neutron star merger known as a kilonova in the constellation of Hydra. So got a lot to get on with today, folks. I'm going to wander into the chat room now and say a big hello to everybody in there. Make sure everybody's okay. There's the test chat room at the moment as well. I can't do both. I'm getting used to it. I'll try posting up links in both and see what happens. let's see who's in the chat room. Let's see who's in the chat room indeed. Let's see. Fantastic host vows. Open Philosophers in the chat room. OP, of course, is the host of the Free Association radio show, which is on Studio B on Saturdays at 11 a.m. Eastern. Another fabulous host vows is in the chat room. Crow. Crow, of course, is the host of the of Market Watch, which is on Studio A Fridays at 4 p.m. Eastern. Fleespiracy Theory is in, as well as Rudolph, another fabulous host of ours. Mitzi is in the chat room. Mitzi, of course, is the host of Bridges Well, Healing with the Elements of Life, which is on Studio B on Sundays at 2 p.m. Eastern. The station's wonderful GM, A-Mad, is in the chat room. Painter has three offerings here on Studio A. He's on Sundays at 11 a.m. Eastern with A Mad Look at Reality. He rounds off Monday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern with Open Canvas. And he also occasionally sees in Saturday mornings at midnight Eastern with an open round table. Another amazing host Fowles is in, Mona. Mona, of course, is over the other side of the studio wall at the moment with today's Adventures of a Feral Hippie. Another lovely host of ours is in. That's the lovely Lizzie, who is the host of two shows here at the station. She's on this studio on Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern with Coffee Time with Lizzie. And she's also on Studio B on Sundays at 11 a.m. Eastern with Spirit Talk with Lizzie. Another fabulous manager, Pat Rabbit, is in the chat room. Patrick, of course, is the host of Not for Public Consumption, which has just finished over on Studio B. Starts midday Eastern on this very day. Oh, excuse me. I don't know what's happening here. Sorry about that. Some weird person by the name of Sari Sunflowers in the chat room, as well as another fabulous manager. That's Monster 383. Monster is there. Say big thanks to him, folks. Say big thanks to him. Fabulous host Mecky is in the chat room, who with David Dunger is the host of two shows here on Studio A. Sundays at 2 a.m. Eastern with Shiny Side Out, and they're both on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 7 a.m. Eastern on this very studio with Plato's Cave. WH Devo is in as well as In the Kitchen. Another fabulous host of ours is in. That's Mechanic. Mechanic, of course, is the host of he temporarily can't do the Common Denominator. I think he can do it. He can do it when he can do it. So he may be on today. He may not be. Not sure. But that'd be 4 p.m. Eastern here. But he's also on in the mornings as well. Monday mornings at 2 a.m. Eastern with an open round table, and he also chairs the High Council round table, also on this studio, midnight Eastern, on Thursday, obviously, season Thursdays. Comet is in as well as Gino 2017. Valerie is in as well as Malaya, the fabulous host of ours is in. Blessing, who with Bryce, they're both the host of From Z to Infinity, which is on this studio on Wednesdays at 6 a.m. Eastern. The Real Deal is in as well as Wally. Blah Plus Two is in as well as Dirt. Another fabulous manager is in. That's the Right Reverend Dr. Mr. Rowe, who has three offerings on this studio. He's on Sundays at 5 p.m. Eastern with the Rowe Lounge. Two 4 p.m. offerings. Mondays is Crypto Corner. Tuesdays is Rowe's Corner. He's on a bit later today at 8 p.m. Eastern on Studio B with Reality Extraction. Mace139 is in as well as Popsicle Toes. Batman is in as well as The Voice of the Overnights at the weekend and sometimes during the week as well. That's Gerbert. And Nezomania is in as well. Let's see who else has been in. Zog's been in as well as Cat Dog Girl. Navy's been in as well as another fabulous host of ours, Mario, who is the host of This, That and the Other, which is on Studio B twice a week, Mondays and Thursdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, rather. Dawn's2U2 has been in as well as Micah. I hope I pronounced that correctly. But if you want to come in and join us, folks, please do. It'd be good to see you. The more, the merrier. Be good to see you. So, let's get started with today's show, shall we? Let's geek out. We're not geeking out. We're going to have a look at the geek headlines. Let's get that right. Because this is a Thursday, after all. We'll be geeking out on... we're going to be geeking out on Monday afternoon next week. Because... the Sunday show is going to be focused on. I'll tell you a bit more about that a bit later. But we start with the geek headlines, which of course comes from the Nexus of Nerddom. This is IO9 Gizmodo with their morning spoilers, posted up today, compiled as always by James Whitbrook and Gordon Jackson, and is headlined, Karen Gillan is unsure of Nebula's future after Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. So the actress reflects on a decade of Marvel movie action after confirming she is wrapped on the third Guardians of the Galaxy movie. So to the surprise of absolutely no one, David Cronenberg's Crimes of the Future has been rated R. Lloyd Kaufman offers an update on Peter Dinklage's Toxic Avenger reboot, plus what's coming on Superman and Lois and The Flash. So spoilers, we start with Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. So Karen Gillan revealed on Instagram she's wrapped filming on Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, adding, I don't know if Nebula will return beyond this. It's possible that this is her final chapter. So here's what she says. And that's a wrap on Nebula in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. I don't know if Nebula will return beyond this. It's possible that this is her final chapter. And if that's the case, then I just want to say thank you to James Gunn for giving me such an interesting, complex and fascinating character to play. I've enjoyed this exploration more than any other character I've played. That was one hell of a decade. Thanks for watching. I tell you, that's going to upset a few Whovians, that is. You know what? You didn't like playing Amy? Hey! I'll anticipate it later on because I lurk through a couple of Doctor Who forums and I fully anticipate it. Get a bit tetchy. The Toxic Avenger is next. So Lloyd Kaufman confirmed to Den of Geek that filming is wrapped on the Toxic Avenger reboot starring Peter Dinklage. So here's a quote. So the movie has been shot. I went over to Bulgaria and it looks like they did a great job. Toxic Avenger reimagining script is definitely better than the original Toxic Avenger. I was only there for a few days, but the director, Macon Blair, is all about trauma. He knows every movie. He's seen Terra Firma. I don't know how many times he's seen that. Romeo and Juliet. He's seen every obscure trauma movie. Next is Austin Powers 4. So Mike Myers hinted a fourth Austin Powers may or may not be in development on a recent episode of SiriusXM's The Jess Cagle Show. This is a quote, so I would love to do one. I can neither confirm nor deny the existence or non-existence of such a project. Should it exist or not exist? It was a non-confirmed confirmation. Crimes of the Future is next, so David Cronenberg's Crimes of the Future has been rated R for strong, disturbing, violent content and grisly images, graphic nudity, and some language. Gatlop is next, so a drinking game holds supernatural stakes in the trailer for Gatlop, available June 16th on VOD. Fear the Walking Dead is next, so Spoiler TV has a brief synopsis for The Raft, the May 15th episode of Fear the Walking Dead. And when they say it's brief, they're not kidding, it's a sentence. Dwight and Sherry must decide between their code and their safety. There you go. Superman and Lois is next, so Lana learns the truth about Clark Kent in the trailer for Lies That Bind, next week's episode of Superman and Lois. And finally is The Flash, so the team mourns Killer Frost in the trailer for A Funeral for a Friend, next week's episode of The Flash. So I'll just share that one there in the chat room. I'm going to share it in the other one as well, see what happens. I'm just going to see what happens. See how it comes up. See how this comes up. Ah, okay. Oh, it does pretty much similar. Okay. All right. Oh, there we go. A bit more detail there. Ooh. Okay. So you can see what it does. It's all right. We're trialing out a new, let's say, a chat room at the moment, and getting to grips with it. We've got the chatty one going. Just to explain, we've got the chatty one going. That's not going anywhere anytime soon. But we're just going to be we're trying out something different as well. So the details about the link, there is a link in that on the website, folks. That's all right. Well, that comes out well, doesn't it? Oh, interesting. So let's see. I think, as I say now, we're just going to go directly to the Spiritual Matters segment, because I want to give this one a wee bit of time to relax itself across, because it is a subject which, now, of course, you know, as soon as I dare say people probably thought as soon as I said, well, we're going to be focusing on the spiritual aspect of death today. Well, there is it's Spiritual Matters. How can you be talking about death? That's not spiritual. There are spiritual aspects to the process of dying. And death is part of life, whether people feel comfortable with that or not. It is an irrevocable fact that death is part of life. And probably one of the individuals who sees this on a daily basis, a medical staff, anybody in a medical staff, anybody in a hospital environment or hospice environment or care home environment, no, less so in a care home unless it's a nursing home for extremely, but I don't know, it's not normally on a daily basis, but this article here is from the Guardian. And it's about 3 years old, but it's still very relevant indeed. It's authored by David Harrison. It was posted up on the 28th of March 2019. And it starts with the headline, "Any patient near to death can have a spiritual experience. I've seen it." David Harrison is a hospital chaplain. And as he says, also as a para heading here, "I know people don't have to be religious. These experiences can happen to anyone." I could see that Harry was a little hesitant. After some inconsequential chat, he decided to tell me about a strange experience he had had. He didn't want to tell the doctors because he was worried they would think he was mentally ill. This sort of thing didn't happen to ordinary people like him. He told me, "I was in the room looking down on my body. There were a lot of people around me, looking anxious and talking to me as they connected tubes and injected my body. Come on, Harry, fight! Stay with us! We're not letting you go that easily." I looked on dispassionately, as if totally detached from this scene. To my right, I could see a beautiful light and was starting to turn towards it. But then I felt myself drawn back into my body, and the next thing, I was waking up in intensive care. I almost felt resentful at being brought back. Harry had had an out-of-body experience. One of the features of my job as a hospital chaplain is that people who are very ill and those who are approaching their death tell me about these spiritual experiences. They are very real, often vivid and intense, and anyone can have them. There can be delight and joy, light and a feeling of being loved, or there can be threat, darkness, and deep malevolence. People may describe them as a glimpse of heaven or hell. Others may feel they have connected with something bigger than themselves. They might use the word transcendent, not exclusively a religious word, or refer to God. They may have sensations of being held, of presence, of warmth suffusing them, usually accompanied by a feeling of peace. So many people have told me about seeing a dead relative as they were going for an operation or were close to death and feeling reassured that things would be okay. Relatives have told me how the dying person behaved as if they could see someone else in the room. It wasn't a look of fear, but of curiosity or even recognition and pleasure. One daughter told me how her mum looked past her and said, "Look, Dad's here. He's come for me." Dad had died years before. I have met a lot of people who tell me they have seen angels. They generally have wings and quite often look like something from a Renaissance religious painting, but not always. The type of experience I've heard most often is the glimpse of an afterlife. Albert, who had been a gardener, had a particularly vivid one. He found himself by the gates of a beautiful garden. They were made of ornate wrought iron with flowing patterns. It was perfect weather, sunny but not too hot, great for the plants, and he could see the garden stretching into the distance. There were all manner of plants, and he felt drawn in. As he walked through the gates, there was a glorious scent. He described it as heavenly. There was a special kind of soft light and music coming from somewhere. As he took in the scene with all his senses, he realized he had the choice to stay or step back. He felt that he had better go back for his family and reluctantly dragged himself away. His son told me, "We realize now that this happened when he was having his stroke. We thought we had lost him." Albert believed he glimpsed heaven, the place where he would go when he died. His fear of what happens after death had been removed altogether. He added, "You know what? If I get another chance to go into that garden, I am not going to come back." His son nodded in agreement. A variant of Albert's story is to be at the end of a long tunnel with a special light at the other end that people feel drawn to. Often there is beautiful music that they have not heard before and cannot properly describe. In all these cases, there is an absence of pain and anxiety, and they may feel joy. Whatever your beliefs about these spiritual events, they can be truly transformative. The person having them can be wary of talking about them because of the fear of being disbelieved as irrational, or that others will say their experiences were the product of a diseased mind. That is a shame, because they can be so helpful in preparing someone for their death. They can be soothing and healing. I have learnt never to make assumptions about people I am professionally engaged with. Time and again, I have been surprised by the experiences people have and who has them. You don't have to be religious to experience them. They can and do happen to anyone. There is a danger of thoroughly medicalizing death when it is a profoundly spiritual experience and unique to each person. In supporting a dying person, our role is to be open to whatever their reality is, to travel with them and, as long as it is not harmful, to affirm that experience. I'll share that one there in the chat room. There we go. And I will share that one in the other one as well, see what happens. The next article is slightly lengthier. And I thought I would explore the topic of the actual bodily process of letting go. What happens to it? And I came across this article on a website called aura.life. And it's, I'm trying to find the author here, because I do like to, it's Robert Bruce is the author. He's the author of Astral Dynamics as well. And it's talking about the aura and death, whether or not it can be observed in the aura before it is known. Aura and death is a fascinating topic. When people are nearing death, their auras change dramatically. The first auric symptoms of approaching death through illness are difficult to diagnose for what they actually are. The etheric aura just starts fading away, very gradually, as the dying person grows weaker, until it is almost undetectable. This also happens, though, during the natural course of many non-fatal illnesses. Please keep this in mind before you start telling people that they're about to die. Oh, yeah, the aura can be affected by, yeah, it can be affected by illness, yeah. For what it's worth, with these poor tools I have of words, I will try to share what I have seen with some terminally ill people during the time leading up to their deaths. This provides a good general example as the timing of the end result, death, is usually fairly predictable. This is the author saying this, by the way, not me. Colours. The colours of the main aura begin to fade and change slowly during the few months prior to death. This continues until there is only a faint tint of colour left in it, giving it a washed-out look. The etheric aura, the thin band of pale blue or creamy aura next to the skin, also fades rapidly during this time. It shrinks a little more each day and pales until it is almost undetectable. The natural bioenergetic recharging process slows as the energy body prepares itself for its approaching demise and the transition of its essential animating spirit into another dimension of existence. A couple of days before death, depending on the nature of the disease, of course, the etheric aura undergoes a dramatic change and begins expanding. The primary and secondary and tertiary energy centres of the energy body seem to open wide at this point and start pumping vast amounts of refined spiritual energy into the energy body, flooding the aura, The energies accompanying this ethereal glow usually have the effect of temporarily uplifting dying persons. It can also cause clairvoyance in varying degrees. While this variability seems affected by innate ability, they will often begin seeing into the next world to see and hear spirits. This can be very confusing for them. Often they will hide the fact that they can see and hear people they know are long dead, not wanting to appear crazy and upset their loved ones. The ethereal expansion continues until it surpasses the original size of a main aura. The colour is a beautiful, very, very pale sky blue, shot through with millions of white and silver sparks. It also develops a peculiar, cool, tingly, fizzy feeling to it. A lot of energy can be sensed in this, but not the normal vitality type of energy. The surrounding atmosphere generated by the expanding ethereal aura often makes people feel uncomfortable. I think this may be because it can be difficult to relate on a personal level to what is happening, i.e. the death process, especially on a spiritual energy level. The heaviness in the atmosphere around a dying person can also cause some perplexing emotions to manifest within those exposed to it. People can become emotionally drained if exposed to this for even a short length of time. In situations like this, understandably, there is also often a lot of fear and sadness permeating the atmosphere. But sensitive to a higher level of perception, there is also a profound emanation of love coming through dying persons, even though they may not feel this themselves. The atmosphere intensifies as the moment of death nears. During the few moments before death, the ethereal cum mystical aura surges dramatically, flooding the room for a moment with a profound, cool stillness. At this moment, it can feel like time itself has stopped. Indeed, I can relate that actually. In the moments coming up to my sister's passing, everything just started seeming to stand still. Very peculiar sensation. The time distortion comes from the room's exposure to an abstract spiritual reality of a higher dimensional existence than the normal physical dimension we live in. The higher the dimensional level, the less the passing of time is apparent. On the highest level, time ceases, and there is only the eternal now. Time stands utterly still. At the moment of death, the released spirit of a deceased person will fly swiftly out of his or her body, sometimes helped by loved ones that are waiting. The spirit's old physical body is now biologically deceased. The unseen ethereal aura then contracts rapidly, imploding and fading away to nothing in a matter of a few seconds. The whole process is like an etheric cum auric bioenergetic explosion, followed by an implosion that sucks all the available energy in the room away with it, often including heat energy. At the moment of death, as the doorway cracks open into a higher reality and the spirit is drawn through it, all free energy can be drawn into it, including the emotional energy being vented by mourners. This can create an unnaturally cold feeling around any newly deceased person. Yes, it does go cold. After death, the atmosphere in the room carries a shocked kind of feeling. That's the only way to really describe it. This is caused by the terrific forces that were working during the death process. You can feel this hanging in the atmosphere wherever there has been a recent death, especially if you are sensitive. Depending on the nature of the death in question, this atmosphere generally fades away over a few days. If it's in an area where there has been a violent or massive loss of life, this shocked feeling can persist for months or even years. The discarded physical body is now left with only a very weak ethereal glow around it, swiftly fading to nothing. This is barely detectable even with the strongest level of auric sight. This is residual etheric matter and not living aura. This fades away very quickly, and nothing more will be seen of a living aura around the corpse. You will see only a pale outline, such as you can see around any inanimate object. The living aura dies with the departure of its essential animating spirit. I've seen a lot of strange and wonderful things around people when they have died, but never have I seen a living aura around a human corpse. The human aura is not to be mistaken as just a mere reflection of what goes on within the living body. It is an integral part of a bioenergetic system binding the essential animating spirit in physical matter, i.e. in its physical body. It is not insubstantial like a rainbow or a projected image. It is only ever present in a living being. It has depth and texture. It has warm and cool areas, and parts of it tingle and pulse. It's the hands of the sensitive, that is. There is a unique look and feel to any human aura. It is a living thing that can be keenly felt by the hands of sensitives and healers, as well as seen and sensed in other ways. The human energy system and its aura, and all the wonderfully complex life processes going on within and around it, enable the essential animating spirit to manifest through it into the physical dimension. The spirit animates the physical body through this wonderful bioenergetic process. When it is the spirit's time to leave its physical body, this all closes down. It's no longer needed when the spirit goes home again, back to its natural, timeless state. The living aura is still very mysterious, for all the little we know about it. And its existence cannot simply be explained away. It may not fit in with our present level of scientific understanding, but that does not mean that it does not exist or is any less real. Aura is strictly a living thing. I'll share that one there in the chat room. And I'll share that one in the other one as well, see what happens. It'll come up in a minute, I'm sure. The next article, it's not an article really. And I've got a few minutes because I wasn't going to read all of it. I'm only going to read a selection of these out. I just came across, when I was researching the show, and I came across, I thought, well, let's just lead on into the next part, which is, can humans actually sense death? And it's a bit of a strange question. And I came up with this selection of answers to this question on Quora. Quora, spelled Q-U-O-R-A, which is where people ask questions and people respond. And there's some good questions. We've got good answers, rather. And I'm just having a look to see what... ones I'm going to share with you. And I won't name the name here, but here's somebody who is they're a physician who makes house calls to terminally ill patients, and oftentimes the behaviour of the person makes me wonder if they know the end is coming. It's very puzzling, and obviously there is no medical explanation to it, but I can tell you some signs that I did observe. An old lady was in the last lap of life. She was tired and weak. But the day prior to her death, she asked her folks to sit her up and clean her and change her into her fresh clothes and wanted to be seated on the veranda instead of lying down. Her folks were overjoyed that she became miraculously all right, but she passed away peacefully in her sleep that night. Again, connected to what was just mentioned in the previous article. B, a person suddenly out of no reason travelled all the way to Chennai to meet her son, and she collapses with a massive heart attack on his shoulders. He said there's plenty more that he can give, but they're just a few. And this one is an interesting one. My grandmother told me once that when she was young, there was a man who lived nearby. He was a well-known lawyer and an even bigger fortune teller. He had a son who lived in a different town, and the former's wife died early due to some reasons. He was a renowned name in the town, but more because of his prophetic skills, in which he indulged himself in the evening after returning from court. It was an era just after independence, and it was much easier for people to believe in such prophets. However, he was different in a way that most things, which he often stated about people, often turned out to be true in time, i.e. to the most accurate date. It created an astounding aura around him, and it was all sailing smooth until one day, one of his visitors said, I'm going to have to say this, Nana Sahib, you foretell everyone's fate, but do you have any idea about when you're going to die? Being a humble man, he said nothing and just smiled at the question. Time went on quickly after that. A few years later, when he died, everyone was there at his funeral. From the top-ranked official to the working-class laborers, everyone wanted to bid adieu to the corpse of a divine man. 14 days later, when all the ceremonies got over, his son discovered something very arcane while cleaning his bed where he used to sleep. It was a piece of paper. It read, 21st of August, 1965. It was the day he died. There's plenty more on here, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to share this in the chat room. Both. And let's see what. Yay, he's come up. So, can they? Yeah. Absolutely. And it's interesting. I'll tell you another time, actually, this one. Don't think I've related it on air before, but I will relate it at another time, as we come up to the top of the hour now. So go and get yourself a cup of tea, cup of coffee. I'll be back after the break with the pep talk segment, Poetry Corner, and the Observatory. So I'll see you in a bit.
Junkie, I won't say a goddamn word. Why? They won't understand. They won't understand why we do it. They won't understand it's about the men next to you. And that's it. That's all it is.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. Number one listener-supported radio, the printing press for freedom, at a time when freedom is needed the most.
Transcending time and space, let us take you to the place inside your mind where thoughts divide and mysteries unwind. Join us every Monday evening right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. and you will catch the Fenton Perspective with our great host, Lorian Fenton. Come listen in as she shares her amazing stories from the past to present, along with all of her guest secrets to the future. That's the Fenton Perspective every Monday evening right here from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only on Revolution Radio. Oh, and you don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm. As expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
Thanks for listening while we take that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Good afternoon and welcome back to the second hour of the Thursday, the 5th of May 2022 edition of Willow's World. My name is Willow Andreasen, also known as Sari Sunflower, in the Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com chat room. And it's just turned 8 o'clock in the evening over here in the UK, which means it's just turned 3 o'clock in the afternoon over on the East Coast, 2 o'clock in the afternoon Central Time, 1 o'clock in the afternoon Mountain Time, and it's just turned midday over on the West Coast. Down under, it's between 5 and 7 in the morning. And about 8 to 9 o'clock in the morning in New Zealand, but wherever you are in the world, I hope that life is being reasonably kind to you and that you're not allowing what is happening around the world, what seems to be enveloping people with fear and anger and confusion isn't affecting you too much. Please do not let it do that. I'm rapidly learning I'm a soul voice, or one of the soul voices out there, saying please don't allow this to affect you. It's difficult, I know. And people like me are shouted down or ridiculed for saying it. but I'm going to keep saying it. Don't allow it to affect you. Don't allow that fear to encapsulate you. Don't allow the... Don't allow fear to get you. Don't allow anger to swallow you whole. Don't allow distress to shackle you. And I haven't got rose-tinted glasses on, far from it. But look beyond those experiences. Look at what you would like from life. And take gentle steps to start creating that world. Working within, difficult, challenging, can lead to many dark souls of a night, that can. But only by going within can you start to change what is going on outside. And it takes work. But it's going to be worthwhile. I'm going to now share a selection of poetry. Pep talk segment time. I can see everybody's settled down in. You are all settled down in the poetry corner. There's some strange noises going on in the background here. I can hear it. Really weird. My, I can hear it through my headset. Very bizarre. But the, yeah, you've all settled down. I can see you've all got your cups of teas and coffees and got the dishes of dainty delectables, and yeah, there's a I've got to put a log going, even though it's not particularly cold, but sometimes it does get a little bit sort of, the early sort of summer evenings get a little bit chilly, so it's just there, so just to take that cold, it doesn't get cold in the room, you know. And I've got patchouli today, burning virtually, that is. And we're going to carry on with a selection of love-focused poetry from the selection I've been sharing for the past 3 or 4 weeks from discoverpoetry.com. And yeah, they're all authored by Charles Swain again. And I'll probably get round to talking about Charles Swain at some point in the dedicated focus. I'll get there. Selection of four today. False as water, the sweetest of all. Childhood's heart and trifles. So I'm looking forward to these. Let's settle down. Start the first poem, which is False as Water. Flow on thou, faithless stream, that maketh all things seem as deep within thy heart. Fern, bell, and drooping tree behold themselves in thee, and yet thou canst depart. Alas, thy little span but mimics faithless man. Like thee too he can stray, like thee a charm reveal, reflect, but never feel, and singing pass away. Flow on, thou canst not touch the wounded heart so much as man's inconstant breath. Thy false tongue near deceives, like his who loves and leaves, takes life and brings us death. What though within thy face our very looks we trace? Thy falsehood's not so deep as his, whose lips can sigh yet leave the heart to die, and, till it dies, to weep. And next is the sweetest of all. Oh, sweet comes the grace of the young dewy morning, as queen-like she steps from her cloud-pillared hall. and lovely the rosebud, its wild home adorning. But love's modest bloom is the sweetest of all. And sweet is the glimpse of the moon o'er the ocean, whose rays, like a blessing, upon our path fall. But the light that awakens the heart's first emotion, oh, love's stolen glance, is the sweetest of all. There's music in nature, like deeper revealings of memories past which her voice would recall. There are tones that, like angels, may visit our feelings, but love's whispered word is the sweetest of all. Next is Childhood's Heart. Childhood's heart its grief displayeth, like a shade at morning cast. Every moment it decayeth, in an hour or two 'tis past. But the grief of age still lieth like the shade of closing day, lengthening, deepening, till it dieth in the grave of night away. Youthful friendship quickly bloometh, quickly fades and blooms again. But the friends which age entombeth, age shall seek and mourn in vain. Firmly manhood's foot is planted, full of independent glow. Age soon finds his room is wanted. Blessed are they who soonest go. And next is Trifles. Trifles even are divine if affection wreathe them round, as the constant eglantine twines its blossoms o'er the ground. As o'er stone and rock it flings grace and bloom in every part, so doth love o'er trifling things wreathe the tendrils of the heart. As those lights, which round the sun dark and cold and distant fall, snatch a glory as they run from that orb which quickens all. So the dark and cold of earth, soon as love illumes their sphere, snatch a ray of heavenly birth. Love can everything endear. Do you know what? I think we've got time for about because I haven't sorted out Monday's show yet, so I haven't dedicated any of these particularly. So I'm going to do another three. Through the Leaves of the Rose. Bonus three coming up now. All by Charles Swain again. Through the Leaves of the Rose. Is the first of the bonus. Though the leaves of the rose should decline one by one, love, you say, will cling to them. Still cherish them on. But unchanged amidst decay, if true love should appear, I'm sorry to say, there's a deal not sincere. A deal not sincere. When the bloom of the rose nothing more can renew, the love that adored can abandon it too. The sweet shrine of self is the object we view. If true love be constant, where find ye the true? Where find ye the true? And the second of the bonus three is The Sun That Warms by Charles Swain. The sun that warms the fading flower may cheer, not change, its doom, may stay its fate for one brief hour, but ne'er restore its bloom. So when the withered heart receives a light of love too late, its charm a while the wreck relieves, but cannot change its fate. That heart, if yesterday caressed, perchance had scaped to decay. That smile, which yesterday had blessed, comes all in vain today. Then, oh, love's vow of honour keep, nor let affection wait. For vain repentance, vain to weep, when kindness comes too late. And finally is A Morn of Love, also by Charles Swain. The sun arose, mid clouds withdrawn, in golden haze, in amber mist. The mountains in the gradual dawn blushed as the god their foreheads kissed. Spirit of the morning threw a holiness where'er we trod, and every drop of perfect dew enshrined an image of the god. Oh, thus I sighed, as bears the dew the presence of yon orb divine. So shrines my heart a form as true, and that blessed form, dear maid, is thine. In sweet confusion, stood she by, with modest air, abashed and meek. The blushes of the eastern sky had left their throne to grace her cheek. Still not in thee spoke hope alone, but in her eyes where truth was born. Oh, never heart of man had known so fair a love, so sweet a morn. I'm going to do another two. I'm in the mood for it. Two of Charles Swain's. Alone at Eve and Hope On. And then we should move on to the poetry corner. So we start with Alone at Eve. Alone at Eve, when all is still, and memory turns to other years. How oft our weary hearts we fill with feelings dark and bitter tears. The friendships of our youthful day, the hopes which time could ne'er fulfill, and voices that have passed away, return at eve, when all is still. When all is still except the breast that wakes too long remembered woe, of parted hopes and hearts oppressed, and loved ones buried long ago. Yet solace may our spirits find, a star to light the darkest ill. There's one the broken heart can bind, alone at eve, when all is still. And finally, is Hope On by Charles Swain. Better hope, and fall from its service weary, than not hope at all in a world uncheery. Better still, though grieved, hope and die deceived, hopeless life is dreary. Better hope, and see constant friendship never, than not hope and be without friendship ever. Better far to miss something of life's bliss, than from all to sever. Better to forgive. Still, of all things, making something bright to give hearts less cause for aching. Though the night hath set, there's morning yet, midst the angels waking. And then next Monday, we're going to be doing some other poems, but they're not going to be by Charles Swain this time. They're not going to be. Da-da-da. Be a different poet. So there we go. That's the pep talk segment. And I can see you're all settled in the poetry corner quite happily. And I'm going to return to the worlds of 20th and early 21st century American poetry. Today's study, one of its most respected of literary talents. He was born in August 1925 in Miami, Florida. His name was Donald Justice. Excuse me a minute. Sorry, just had to mute a moment. And I've got a couple of articles that I'm going to share about him because there's not an awful lot really known about him. He was a very intensely private man and sort of tried to keep himself very much to himself. And he gave away information. I mean, he wrote obviously about his experiences in his poetry, which tends to some poems can tend to be autobiographical in nature. But the I'm going to share the first paragraph from his Wikipedia page first, before I read these articles, one of which is from the Poetry Society of America. And the final one from my poetic side before I share a selection of his poetry with you. So from Wikipedia first, Donald Rodney Justice was born on August the 12th, 1925. He died on August the 6th, 2004. He was an American teacher of writing and he was a poet who won the Pulitzer Prize for Poetry in 1980. In summing up Justice's career, David Orr wrote, "In most ways, Justice was no different from any number of solid, quiet older writers devoted to traditional short poems. But he was different in one important sense. Sometimes his poems weren't just good, they were great. They were great in the way that Elizabeth Bishop's poems were great, or Tom Gunn's or Philip Larkin's. They were great in the way that tells us what poetry used to be and is and will be." Oh, hello, Mario. My favourite poem for a sunny day. Ooh. That's a good question. I'll have to think about that one, Mario. I will have to think about that one. I'd say Invictus, actually. I covered Invictus the other day, didn't I? On Monday, in fact. And I'm just trying to remember the poet's name because my memory is not fantastic at the moment. William Ernest Henley. Yeah, I thought it was William Henley, but I just wanted to make sure it was absolutely right. Yeah, Invictus by William Ernest Henley. It's a good pep-me-up poem. We'll start with this article from Poetry Society of America. It's authored by Mark Strand, who, of course, is a notable poet himself. He was one of Donald Justice's students. And so I thought it'd be great to share what the student's tribute to his previous tutor. And it's rather sweet, actually. I'm not sure that Don Justice would want much said about him. He was a fastidiously private person where it mattered, that is, in public. He did not like to call attention to himself, at least not overtly, and cultivated an amiable distance between himself and others, which, over time, would close and finally cease to exist. He was the thin man of his poem, The Thin Man. "I indulge myself in rich refusals. Nothing suffices. I hone myself to this edge. Asleep, I am a horizon." Don was repelled by affectation, but was oddly attracted to the theatrical. He could be cutting about the claims others made for themselves, but was forgiving if the claims were presented with style. His own style was shaped by the thin man's rich refusals. He chose his words for the weight they carried, not for the space they filled. A thin man indeed, but one whose presence was unignorable. My friendship with Don began in the early 60s at the University of Iowa, where he was teaching in the writer's workshop and where I was a student for 1 year and thenceforth, for several years, a teacher. Don and I tended to agree on matters relating to poetry, We even collaborated on poems and gave each other writing assignments, the most notable of which, and perhaps the only remaining, is Donne's Incident in a Rose Garden, a brilliant retelling of the Sufi fable that prefaces John O'Hara's appointment in Samarra. But we spent more time playing ping-pong, pinball, poker, cribbage, and various board games. We even invented a board game we called Art Market, which, alas, was preempted by an inferior one, naturally, that Parker Brothers marketed called Masterpiece. Donne took games seriously, was very competitive, so much so that for me, and I suspect for others as well, losing to him came as something of a relief. In the classroom, it was different. No competition existed there. Donne was clearly much more accomplished than the rest of us. A great teacher, he was unfailingly sensitive to the needs of a particular poem and was able to extract its buried meaning while politely acknowledging its apparent meaning. Then, once the excavation was accomplished, he would speculate on ways the poem might be resuscitated. There was a dignity, never forced, about the way he treated our poems, even those of little promise. It is remarkable that Donne's students, many of whom were among the best-known poets in America, write nothing like him. I know from my own experience that he urged me to cultivate what was idiosyncratic in my work. The reserve that Donne exhibited so palpably in his relations with others is, for me at least, one of the endearing and enduring features of his poetry. Yet one could never say that his poems are impersonal. His intensely rational and sceptical nature, though almost always present, would sometimes undergo a beautiful and heartbreaking symbolist revision when childhood or the past was invoked. His apostrophes, so full of feeling, full of anguish really, in their attempt to call back into being that which has been lost, are delivered with a tone of dignified surrender. Surrender to feeling, of course, but dignified by being first and foremost fictive elements within the matrix of a poem. Little lost bohemias of the suburbs. Seasons of half-forgetfulness, lost and wordless. Indecipherable blurred harmonies. Ineluctable blues of the middle class. Donne's poems are always recognisably his. A kind of metrical languor relates their movements as they unfold, unhurriedly, sometimes circuitously, even reluctantly, towards their end. He could linger on a detail as if its retrieval were imperishable in the imperishable twilight of the poem. He was an elegist whose tireless evocation of loss became a form of replenishment, a radiant fullness. And it was not just his own past he returned to in his poems. Often he cast his lines back to other poets' poems, reimagining them in the context of his own life. Thus, for example, the humorously grandiose first line of Wallace Stevens' poem Anecdote of a Jar, "I placed the jar in Tennessee," becomes the equally humorous and grandiose "There is no music now in all of Arkansas," the first line of a poem written for his friend, the pianist Thomas Higgins. Donne's precision in aesthetic matters and his courtesy in personal ones masked, I believe, a vivid inwardness. An inwardness of the sort we sense in the paintings of Edward Hopper, or even further back, say, in the paintings of Piero della Francesca. It may have been his sympathy with such projections of hiddenness that moved Donne late in life to try his hand at painting. I can recall many instances of his phoning me up and asking me, because I had once been an art student, questions relating to technique. He wanted his paintings to look like they were done by a painter and not a poet. He had no desire to appear amateurish, nor to have it seem as though the making of his paintings entailed a struggle. In his artistic pursuits, which, it should be mentioned, also included musical composition, he was very much a purist, but quirkily and beguilingly so. Still, the work for which he will be remembered is, of course, his poems, whose principal beauty lies in the wistful articulation and sad acknowledgement that little or nothing survives the great drama and effort that is life. Sorry news, but conveyed always with a certain dark, inimitable charm, beautifully, unforgettably. And I will show that one and the other one as well. Oh! Oh, Patrick's just said his mum was born the same day as Donald Justice. There you go. I think I've got time to read this one out. I should do, and then I'll share some of Donald Justice's poems with you. This is from my poetic side. Regarded by some as a poet's poet, Pulitzer Prize-winning poet Donald Justice was revered by fellow writers for his mastery of precision and his ability to make every piece of writing vital. His poems tended to be short, 40 lines or less. Justice once said, "One motive for much, if not all art is, to keep memorable what deserves to be remembered." He was born in Miami, Florida on August 12, 1925. Hang on, we've got two different dates here, haven't we? Not much is known about his early life for his parents, other than that he was the only child of an itinerant carpenter and that he was the product of a Depression-era poor family. Despite this, he received a comprehensive education, though this time at Alapata Elementary School was disrupted, or his time, rather, at Alapata Elementary School, was disrupted for a year by the bone disease osteomyelitis. But he continued at high school, then went on to study for almost a decade, receiving a degree from the University of North Carolina in 1945 and a doctorate from the University of Iowa in 1954. He also studied art and music and could have been successful had he chosen to make a career in either of these fields, but lacked confidence in his musical abilities, and his first love was always writing. He began writing poetry at the University of North Carolina, where he also met the woman who became his wife, fellow writer Jean Ross. His very first collection of poems was the Summer Anniversaries, which brought him the Lamont Poetry Prize in 1961. His poem from that collection, On the Death of Friends in Childhood, epitomised his style and preference for keeping his work short, as it comprised only six lines. "We shall not ever meet them bearded in heaven, nor sunning themselves among the bald of hell. If anywhere, in the deserted schoolyard at twilight, forming a ring, perhaps, or joining hands in games whose very names we have forgotten. Come, memory, let us seek them there in the shadows." His writing was described as elegant and craftsmanlike, often speaking of loss and the bleakness of a life which does not reach its potential, though this could hardly describe Justice's own life. Whilst remaining largely unacknowledged by literary critics, he received many honours in his lifetime, including the Bollingen Prize for Poetry in 1991 and the Lannan Literary Award for Poetry in 1996. He received grants from the Guggenheim Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, and the National Endowment for the Arts. From 1997 to 2003, he was Chancellor of the Academy of American Poets. He held teaching posts at several prestigious universities up until his retirement in 1992. The Rockefeller Award in 1954 had afforded Justice the means and opportunity to travel to Europe for a year, an experience which broadened his talents and enabled him to be a competent translator. Following this sojourn, he returned to Iowa, where he had studied for a doctorate with the University of Iowa's Creative Writing Program. He went on to teach the Iowa City Writers' Workshop for 10 years, inspiring all his students, while continuing to produce a total of 13 volumes of poetry. Despite his ironic assertion in his 1973 poem Variations on a text by Vallejo that "I will die in Miami in the sun," Justice actually died in Iowa City on August 6, 2004, where he had lived with his wife Jean since 1955. Westchester University in Pennsylvania to this day offer the Donald Justice Poetry Prize for unpublished collections. So I'll just share that one there in the chat room, both. And yep, got time to share a couple of his poems. Which ones am I drawn to? Birthday Candle. 30 today, I saw the trees flare briefly like the candles on a cake. as the sun went down the sky. A momentary flash, yet there was time to wish. No, it should still be on. Hasn't come up with anything weird. Although I have to, you know, I have noticed that the internet has been behaving rather strangely over recent days. I think I've got time for one more, because these are very brief poems. Except this one isn't. Love Stratagems. We'll finish with this one. Love's Stratagems by Donald Justice. But these manoeuvrings to avoid the touching of hands, these shifts to keep the eyes employed on objects more or less neutral, as honour, the time being, commands, will hardly prevent their downfall. Stronger medicines are needed. Already they find none of their stratagems have succeeded, nor would have, no, not had their eyes been stricken blind, hands cut off at the elbow. I think that'll be enough for today. It's enough for today. There we go. That concludes today's Poetry Corner. So now, I suggest we wrap ourselves up a little bit warm. I don't know, it's not really cold out there, but just put something warm around your shoulders, and we're going to go out to the observatory now. Got four articles lined up in today's observatory. That was a bit weird. What was that? Weird. Anyway, carrying on. Yeah, I've got four articles today. We're travelling fairly extensive distances for these ones today. Going to need to telescope a bit as well. Four articles lined up. Today's observatory. First one is from the European Southern Observatory's website, posted up on 16th of February this year. And I don't think it's got any particular author assigned to it. I did look for that because I do like to mention the author of articles. And this is headlined, Supermassive Black Hole Caught Hiding in a Ring of Cosmic Dust. So European Southern Observatory's very large telescope interferometer, that's the VLTI, ESO's VLTI, has discovered a cloud of cosmic dust at the centre of a galaxy, Messier 77, that is hiding a supermassive black hole. The findings have confirmed predictions made around 30 years ago and are giving astronomers new insight into active galactic nuclei, some of the brightest and most enigmatic objects in the universe. So active galactic nuclei, AGNs, are extremely energetic sources powered by supermassive black holes and found at the centre of some galaxies. These black holes feed on large volumes of cosmic dust and gas. Before it is eaten up, this material spirals towards the black hole and huge amounts of energy are released in the process, often outshining all the stars in the galaxy. Astronomers have been curious about AGNs ever since they first spotted these bright objects in the 1950s. Now, thanks to ESO's VLTI, a team of researchers led by Violeta Gomez-Rosas from Leiden University in the Netherlands have taken a key step towards understanding how they work and what they look like up close. The results are published today in Nature. Or then. It was not today, on the 16th of February, that is. By making extraordinarily detailed observations of the centre of the galaxy Messier 77, also known as NGC 1068, Gomez-Rosas and her team detected a thick ring of cosmic dust and gas hiding a supermassive black hole. This discovery provides vital evidence to support a 30-year-old theory known as the Unified Model of AGNs. Astronomers know there are different types of AGN. For example, some release bursts of radio waves while others don't. Certain AGNs shine brightly in visible light, while others, like Messier 77, are more subdued. The unified model states that despite their differences, all AGNs have the same basic structure, a supermassive black hole surrounded by a thick ring of dust. According to this model, any difference in appearance between AGNs results from the orientation at which we view the black hole and its thick ring from Earth. The type of AGN we see depends on how much the ring obscures the black hole from our viewpoint, completely hiding it in some cases. Astronomers had found some evidence to support the unified model before, including spotting warm dust at the centre of Messier 77. However, doubts remained about whether this dust could completely hide a black hole and hence explain why this AGN shines less brightly in visible light than others. The real nature of the dust clouds and their role in both feeding the black hole and determining how it looks when viewed from Earth have been central questions in AGN studies over the last three decades, explains Gomez-Rosas. Whilst no single result will settle all the questions we have, we have taken a major step in understanding how AGNs work. The observations were made possible thanks to the multi-aperture and mid-infrared spectroscopic experiment MATISSE, mounted on ESO's VLTI, located in Chile's Atacama Desert. MATISSE combined infrared light collected by all four 8.2-metre telescopes of ESO's Very Large Telescope, VLT, using a technique called interferometry. The team used MATISSE to scan the centre of Messier 77, located 47 million light-years away, in the constellation Cetus. MATISSE can see a broad range of infrared wavelengths, which lets us see through the dust and accurately measure temperatures. Because the VLTI is in fact a very large interferometer, we have the resolution to see what's going on even in galaxies as far away as Messier 77. The images we obtain detail the changes in temperature and absorption of the dust clouds around the black hole, says co-author Walter Jaffa, a professor at Leiden University, and I hope I pronounced his name correctly. Combining the changes in dust temperature from around room temperature to about 1200 degrees centigrade, or Celsius rather, caused by the intense radiation from the black hole with the absorption maps, the team built up a detailed picture of the dust and pinpointed where the black hole must lie. The dust, in a thick inner ring and a more extended disk, with the black hole positioned at its centre, supports the unified model. The team also used data from the Atacama Large Millimeter Submillimeter Array, co-owned by ESO, and the National Radio Astronomy Observatory's Very Long Baseline Array, to construct their picture. Our results should lead to a better understanding of the inner workings of AGNs, concludes Gomez-Rosas. They could also help us better understand the history of the Milky Way, which harbours a supermassive black hole at its centre, that may have been active in the past. I think it still is, but anyway. The researchers are now looking to use ESO's VLTI to find more supporting evidence of a unified model of AGNs by considering a larger sample of galaxies. Team member Bruno Lopez, the MATISSE principal investigator of the Observatoire de la Côte d'Azur in Nice, France, says, Messier 77 is an important prototype AGN and a wonderful motivation to expand our observing program and to optimize MATISSE to tackle a wider sample of AGNs. ESO's extremely large telescope, set to begin observing later this decade, will also aid the search, providing results that will complement the team's findings and allow them to explore the interaction between AGNs and galaxies. So there you go. I'll just show that one there in the chat room. And the other one as well. And the next article is from the WM Keck Observatory website. Posted up on February 17th this year. Again, no real dedicated author to this article. But it's headlined, Astronomers Discover Widest Separation of Brown Dwarf Pair to Date. Now, you're probably wondering, that's a bit weird. What's so significant about that? Well, you're just about to find out. Excuse me while I just get myself comfortable. Team of astronomers has discovered a rare pair of brown dwarfs that has the widest separation of any brown dwarf binary system found to date. Because of their small size, brown dwarf binary systems are usually very close together, said Emma Sotik, an undergraduate astrophysics student at the Arizona State University, the ASU School of Earth and Space Exploration, and lead author of the study. Finding such a widely separated pair is very exciting. Could be Softish, actually. Her surname. Gravitational force between a pair of brown dwarfs is lower than for a pair of stars with the same separation. So wide brown dwarf binaries are more likely to break up over time, making this pair of brown dwarfs an exceptional find. The study, which is based on observations at the University of California, San Diego, UC San Diego, Cool Star Lab, conducted with W.M. Keck Observatory in Mauna Kea, Hawaii Island, is published on February 17th, 2022's issue of the Astrophysical Journal Letters. Using Keck's observatory near-red Echelet spectrometer, or NIRS instrument, rather, members of the UC San Diego Cool Star Lab, including physics professor Adam Bergasser and graduate students Christian Aganze and Dino Su, obtained infrared spectra of the brown dwarf binary system called CY's J014611.20-050850.0AB. I think I'm just going to call it CY's J014 for short, I think. The data revealed the two brown dwarfs are about 12 billion miles apart, or three times the separation of Pluto from the Sun. This distance confirms the unusual brown dwarf couple breaks a record for having the widest separation from each other. Keck's exceptional sensitivity in the room infrared with this instrument was critical for our measurements, says co-author Bergasser, who leads the Cool Star Lab. The secondary brown dwarf of this system is exceptionally faint, but with Keck, we were able to obtain good enough spectral data to classify both sources and identify them as members of a rare class of blue L dwarfs. Wide low-mass systems like CY's J014-66611, rather, are usually disrupted early on in their lifetimes. So the fact that this one has survived until now is pretty remarkable, said co-author Adam Schneider of the U.S. Naval Observatory, Flagstaff Station, and George Mason University. Brown dwarfs are celestial objects that are smaller than a normal star. These objects are not massive enough to sustain nuclear fusion and shine like normal stars, but are hot enough to radiate energy. Many brown dwarfs have been discovered with data from NASA's Wide Field Infrared Survey Explorer, that's WISE, via the Backyard Worlds Planet 9 Citizen Science Project, which solicits help from the public to search the WISE image data bank to find brown dwarfs and low-mass stars, some of the Sun's nearest neighbours. For this study, the researchers inspected images of Backyard Worlds discoveries, where companion brown dwarfs may have been overlooked. In doing so, they discovered the rare CY's J014611 brown dwarf binary system. Softish went through about 3,000 brown dwarfs from Backyard Worlds one by one and compared the WISE images to other survey images, looking for evidence of a brown dwarf companion to the original target. The team then used data from the Dark Energy Survey, the DES, to confirm that it was indeed a brown dwarf pair. They then used Keck Observatory's NIRS to confirm the brown dwarfs have spectral types L4 and L8, and that they are at an estimated distance of about 40 parsecs, or 130.4 light-years from Earth, with a projected separation of 129 astronomical units, or 129 times the distance between the Sun and the Earth. The team hopes its discovery will allow astronomers a chance to study brown dwarf binary systems and to develop models and procedures that will help in recognizing more of them in the future. Binary systems are used to calibrate many relations in astronomy, and this newly discovered pair of brown dwarfs will present an important test of brown dwarf formation and evolution models, said co-author Jennifer Patience, Softish's advisor at ASU. I'll just share that one there in the chat room. And in that one as well. The next article is from NASA's website, posted up on February the 18th this year. We're focusing on galaxies still, folks, with this one. It's a very brief one, actually, authored by Claire Andreoli, and was posted up on February the 18th this year, and it's Hubble Captures Swirling Galactic Trio. And it's a rather fabulous image, actually. Dance of death, if ever I've seen one. Although, if you say from out of that dance will come another different type of galaxy. So the mass of dust and bright swirls of stars in this image are the distant galaxy merger IC-2431, which lies 681 million. Which lies 681 million light years from Earth in the constellation Cancer. The NASA ESA Hubble Space Telescope has captured what appears to be a triple galaxy merger in progress, as well as a tumultuous mixture of star formation and tidal distortions caused by the gravitational interactions of this galactic trio. Thick cloud of dust obscures the center of this image, though light from a background galaxy is piercing its outer extremities. The image is from a series of Hubble observations investigating weird and wonderful galaxies found by the Galaxy Zoo Citizen Science Project. Using Hubble's powerful advanced camera for surveys, astronomers took a closer look at some of the more unusual galaxies that volunteers identified. The original Galaxy Zoo project was the largest galaxy census ever carried out and relied on crowdsourcing time from more than 100,000 volunteers to classify 900,000 unexamined galaxies. The project achieved what would have been years of work for a professional astronomer in only 175 days, and has led to a steady stream of similar astronomical citizen science projects. Later Galaxy Zoo projects have included the largest ever studies of galaxy mergers and tidal dwarf galaxies, as well as the discovery of entirely new types of compact star-forming galaxies. So there you go. Show that one there in the chat room as well. And in the other one. They come up really well in the other one. You can actually see what it's all about. You get to see the images while I'm talking about them. Yay! There you go. And finally, we're going to the Chandra X-ray Observatory site for this one. And this was posted up February 28th this year. Many people worked on this one. And it's headlined GW170817, the unfolding story of a killer nova told in X-rays. It's an illustration, this one, but there's an X-ray image of it as well. So here's some pointers here. NASA's Chandra X-ray Observatory continues to study GW170817, a neutron star merger that produced gravitational waves. Many telescopes saw different kinds of light after the discovery in August 2017. But only Chandra is still making a detection. Early Chandra data revealed the presence of a narrow jet that has slowed down and expanded over time, and the latest study presents X-ray evidence for a shock, similar to a sonic boom from an airplane, in the aftermath of the merger. So an artist's conception illustrates the aftermath of a killer nova, a powerful event that happens when two neutron stars merge. As described in our press release, NASA's Chandra X-ray Observatory has been collecting data on the killer nova associated with GW170817 since shortly after it was first detected in gravitational waves by the Laser Interferometry Gravitational Wave Observatory, LIGO, and Virgo on August 17, 2017. GW170817 was the first, and thus far the only, cosmic event where both gravitational waves and electromagnetic radiation, or light, were detected. This combination provides scientists with critical information about the physics of neutron star mergers and related phenomena, using observations at many different parts of the electromagnetic spectrum. Chandra is the only observatory still able to detect light from this extraordinary cosmic collision more than 4 years after the original event. Astronomers think that after neutron stars merge, the debris generates visible and infrared light from the decay of radioactive elements like platinum and gold formed in the debris from the merger. This burst of light is called a killer nova. Indeed, visible light and infrared emission were detected from GW170817 several hours after the gravitational waves. Initially, the neutron star merger likely produced a jet of high-energy particles that was not pointed directly at Earth, explaining an initial lack of X-rays seen by Chandra. The jet then slowed down and widened upon impact with surrounding gas and dust. These changes caused an increase in X-rays observed by Chandra, followed by a decline in early 2018. However, since the end of 2020, the X-rays detected by Chandra have remained at a nearly constant level. The Chandra image from data taken in December 2020 and in January 2021 shows X-ray emission from GW170817 from the centre of its host galaxy, NGC 4993. Research teams studying the Chandra data think this steadying of the X-ray emission comes from a shock, like a sonic boom from an airplane, as the merger debris responsible for the kilonova strikes gas around GW170817. Material heated by such a shock would glow steadily in X-rays, giving a kilonova afterglow, like Chandra has observed. The artist's illustration shows the merger debris responsible for the kilonova in blue, surrounded by a shock depicted in orange and red. There is also an alternative explanation suggesting that the X-rays come from material falling towards a black hole that formed after the neutron stars emerged. This material is depicted by a small disk in the centre of the illustration. To avoid a coincidence, it is likely that only one of the two options, the kilonova afterglow or matter falling onto a black hole, is a significant source of the detected X-rays. Two blue glowing arcs of the material above and below the kilonova show where material from the now faded jet has struck surrounding material. To distinguish between the two explanations, astronomers will keep monitoring GW170817 in X-rays and radio waves. If it is a kilonova afterglow, the radio emission is expected to get brighter over time and be detected again in the next few months or years. If the explanation involves matter falling onto a newly formed black hole, then the X-ray output should stay steady or decline rapidly, and no radio emission will be detected over time. Researchers recently announced the source was detected in new Chandra observations performed in December 2021. Analysis of that data is ongoing. No radio detection has yet been reported. So, thank you, Pat. Yeah, they are. They are really interesting, aren't they? So, coming up to the end of the show now, folks, I'm not sure if I'm handing you over to a mechanic or not, but something's going to be on after me, I'm sure. We've got plenty going on both studios tonight, folks, so stay tuned in. We've got so many different shows here. We've got Sean David Morton coming up at 1 a.m. in the Hawk's Nest as well, and I'll be back with you on Sunday, 9 a.m. Eastern, Studio B with Willow's Weekend World. So you all take care. You have a great few days. See you in the weekend.
Radio. Are you interested in the paranormal? Murder mystery? Real natural law? Do you enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Crip Rick every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Revolution Radio. Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crip Rick's Ivan Baker. Welcome to the Crypt.
Anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Look, you stupid bastard, you've got no arms left.
Yes, I have.
Look.
Just a flesh wound.
I don't believe I've seen such a display of courage, skill, nerve, grace, stupidity.
I'll do you for that.
What?
Come here. What are you going to do, bleed on me? I'm invincible.
You're a loony.
The Black Knight always triumphs.
Roundtable Live, Monday through Friday, 1 a.m. till 4 a.m. Eastern Time. Bring your mind, bring your ideas, bring your voice. King Arthur had nothing on us. Here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com.